from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcast, as was quoted this week, that the sheep listen to when they're tired of counting themselves. It's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep.
All right, but this is Scoots here. This is where I ask you to, hey, if you think about signing up for Sleep With Me Plus at sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. Which, just a few questions. If you're new to the show, just ignore this message. Or if you only listen to Sleep With Me occasionally, or it could be easily replaced by another show, not important. Do you listen to Sleep With Me regularly? Yes. But yeah, does it improve your life in any way at all? And would you miss Sleep With Me if we stopped making it? Like, how much would you be willing to give on an annual basis or a monthly basis to say, hey, go ahead, start that podcast back up? So this is a way of not doing that. I'm asking, if the answers to those questions are yes, yeah, you're a regular listener. Yes, Sleep With Me improves your life. Yes, I could and would pay for the show if it was missing from my life. I'd pay to get it back. Or if you lost it, like you'd say, oh, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Could you help me find it? And this is a reward, whatever, $120. I need my year of Sleep With Me back. Or you would find a way to support the show if you said, well, now I got to put up a poster. If the answers are yes, we're kind of in that place right now, and the whole podcasting industry is in that place more or less, where it's like, hey, I really need you to think about supporting the show right now if the answer is yes to those questions. So we don't have to go through, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Because I don't want that. I love making the show. It does take a team of people to make the show. So think about it. sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. If you get a lot out of the show and you'd miss it and you'd say, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Sign up for sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. And I'll thank you. Believe me, I'll send you a video and say thanks. Thanks so much. All right, everybody. It's time to talk about tonight's sponsor, Helix Sleep. Do yourself a favor, go to helixsleep.com/sleep and take that Helix quiz. That was about 4 years ago that I took the Helix quiz, got matched with the Helix Dusk Lux, which is a perfect mattress for me and the way I sleep. Because the thing is, the Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux collection, the newly released Helix Elite collection. They have a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, even a mattress made just for kids. And how would you know which one is going to fit you and your body? You just take that Helix Sleep Quiz. You find the perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. That personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new mattress. And here's the thing. Everybody's unique. Everybody sleeps differently. And that is why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from. Each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. You know, if you're like me, I sleep on my stomach and my side. I sleep a hot, so I want to stay cool. And that's what happened. I took the quiz. I got matched with the Helix Dusk Lux. I love my Helix Dusk Lux. And the way I know is every time I leave town, I cannot wait to get back. That first night back in my Helix Dusk Lux, it's like I'm in a state of sleep bliss. Not only is it the best mattress I've slept on, but setup is fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box straight to your door for free. And Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/sleep and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet. It won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Support for Sleep With Me comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/withme. That's odoo.com/withme. Odoo, modern management made simple.
I hate you, all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble falling asleep. Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that's here to put you to sleep, we do is a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. And what I'm going to do is create a safe place where you can set aside whatever's keeping you up at night. Whether it's thinking, physical sensations, feelings, external noises, disruptions in your routine, something you're, you know, say you're going on vacation, whatever it is, coming back from vacation, but whatever it is, I'm going to try to take your mind off of that. And the way I'm going to do is I'm going to use, I'm going to send my voice across the deep dark night here, and I'm going to send my intention to put you to sleep, and I'm going to use lulling, soothing tones, languid pace, other, you know, we got this new thesaurus, so, you know, books with words, synonyms, I may use antonyms, homonyms, phonemes, you know, I may even raise your phoneme awareness. I mean, the ridiculous thing is I have no, like, this is my brain, there's literally, sometimes my life is like Homer Simpson. I literally just, I'm not kidding. A door just closed in my brain and someone walked out and they said, you lost me at whatever came before homonym. And then I said, wait, was it antonym? I said, okay, we know. Okay, thesaurus, that's the book with the word, you know. So we got that. And then the other one was easy, like word book. We know that one. And then we said, yeah, I don't know what the first and antonym, that's the opposite, and then homonym sound. Okay, so I said, you're right. Can you come back? I may need you, though, because I don't know which part of my brain just took off. So, hey, come on back. But the whole idea of the show is to take your mind off. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to go into an intro. And for a lot of people, the intro is the show, you know. So I make a disjointed metaphor, thesaurus used to. And I could imagine people are lying in bed wondering if the only problem with it is this is a faux thesaurus, because if I had a real thesaurus, one, I'd be making all sorts of noise. Two, I'd be dropping it and bumping it into the mic and stuff. So but still picture me with a padded, the most luxurious, I have this thesaurus in my hands right now. With a thick padded leather cover. Luckily, with the back one, they designed it for me. It was, believe it or not, I was in one of my trips to Westeros, where, because they have this Ruing Roose Bolton, I don't really talk about that until the end of the show, but spoiler, like a Ruing Roose Bolton, if you don't listen to Game of Thrones, don't worry, this podcast should still put you to sleep. But before we even get to the Game of Thrones stuff, this isn't really even an inside joke, so Roose Bolton's a character on Game of Thrones that I rude, R-U-E. He's rude, R-U-D-E. That's one of the reasons I rude him. Still ruining him, though. But I found this machine behind a dumpster where all great machine, you know, and then I did some tinkering, and it turns out this is a fantasy. I forgot what it's called. I named it. But it travels both fictions and fantasies, fans and fictions, transverse planes. George R. R. Martin has yet to find out about it. And I don't think Weiss and Benioff know about it either. I mean, they would probably just shrug. And I don't know what who even the Jets quarterback is. So George R. could have his hands full anyway. But this machine, and you say, well, you might not believe this, you know, this is me, this is who I am. It travels to Westeros, believe it or not, powered by some sort of magic, and my ruining of Roose Bolton is the energy that, and they say, well, geez, what about Ramsay? That's Roose's son. And he's, you know, I don't rue him, because ruining, I don't have, you know, this padded thesaurus, I don't really have time to look up an alternate meaning, because rue more captures the emotion. It's a, like, rue is like a little bit different for me than pity, because it has a little schadenfreude in there. Or is it zeitgeist? No, I think it's schadenfreude. Well, maybe not. It's like, yeah, I almost pity Roos, but I so strongly want to pity him. I don't know. I guess, over-explaining, that's another thing I do on this podcast. Getting lost while over-explaining, especially when you say, geez, Scoots, you were in the middle, you were going, I know, it was like, I'm like the kid that runs towards the wrong goalpost, basket, goal, runs from third base to second base. Actually, my mom is speaking of talking about all over the boat. We were talking about sports, and she said, remember when you were, one year you played Little League and you were literally picking clovers in the outfield? And yeah, that was at I said, thanks, Mom. Thanks a lot. Yep, yes, that was me. I think it was preceded by those coaches. They didn't like you, did they? And I said, but so I'll go off topic. You get lost in my thoughts. I have a perfectly good, good podcast, they'd say. One highly recommend. Like, let's see, we got 99% Invisible. They would talk about the original design of the thesaurus. We got our friends over at Criminal. They would say, well, geez, there was once this great thesaurus, and then there was this couple, these thesaurus collectors, and then, there was this motor, what it was called, not a moped, but it was the other thing that goes faster than a moped, but it's not a motorcycle. That might be a moped. And then that thesaurus was gone, so that would be Criminal. Mystery show, somebody say, I had this thesaurus that had a glove on the back, because that's what I was going to say before my brain went, hayward, I guess would be the correct term. But on this podcast, they said, well, geez, we have a perfectly good metaphor. Right? Let's disjoint that thing. Like, kind of like I'm like a furniture craftsman. Yeah, I just mispronounced it correctly. I'm a furniture craftsman with words. I didn't even need a thesaurus for that, because I don't think that's technically a word or a thing. Because story is my furniture. And disjoint, oh boy. This is, if you're new here, this is 100%. This is a pure, unadulterated dose of what the podcast is like. You get a tiny bit of glee. You have something to distract you. Say, okay, see, and your brain says, well, I think I see where he's going with that thesaurus. Didn't he say it had a nice leather cover? Thick padding. Okay, that's some rich imagery he's dropping on us. Pages made from the finest. And then that's when right there. See, did you catch that pause? That's like the secret sauce in the podcast. And believe it or not, say, well, is that attention? Is that brilliance or misfiring neurons? It's just my neurons misfire at the exact right time to put people to sleep. It's just the glove. This thesaurus glove fits. I mean, I guess the original thing was, I was going to say, I went to Westeros, I got this thesaurus with a glove on it so I could look up words in a witty, I was going to try to be witty, because then I wouldn't have dropped. And I said, well, that'd be, and I did say that, like that other person in my brain said, oh, there'd be some good imagery. Get some tactile thesaurus imagery going, crack a few thesauri-related jokes. But I guess that wouldn't be my podcast. You say, good old neurons. I know you can't hear it when I pat my neurons, because, they're covered in, I think they're covered. They are. They have a sheath. I believe neurons have a sheath. Most people's do. Mine don't. That's why they're able to misfire at such perfect times. Thanks. I wish I had a nickname for my neurons, because everything seems like Nernies. I guess Nernies. That kind of doesn't sit there. It's all right for now. Thanks, Nernies. Okay, they just left, too. So that's it. That's the podcast. The whole idea is I'm going to ramble. And ramble's maybe a little bit, I'm just going to see where my brain takes us. How's that sound? But it will have a structure. Like, and the whole reason behind the loose structure, if I was building a house, just like the disjointed furniture I might may build one day. you know, before it falls apart, you say, well, that can't, you know, I can tell it's going to fall apart, but I can also tell what it is. So what I'll do is we're going to finish up this intro. Then we'll just do a quick housekeeping. Then I'm going to talk about this week's episode of Game of Thrones. Then I'm going to talk about stuff that came up in the episode that made me curious. Then, thanks to the miracle of the Ruining Roose Bolton fan fiction fantasy time machine, it had a better name once upon a time, but those neurons, they never came back. The naming neurons, alliteration neurons are still in there, apparently. I'm really cracking myself up tonight. I don't know why. I guess I'm in a good mood, but holy mackerel. Somebody make sure to email me and say, geez, this intro come out way after I recorded, but that's fine. You know, they say those happiness neurons were misfiring at just the right time, too. But where was I? So we'll have, because of the miracle of the fan fiction, fantasy fiction machine, we'll have a visit from Sir Tommen and Sir Pounce. Satirious parody characters they have a vague similarity to other characters, but are not in any way fan fiction because they're real, because of the Ruining Roost, because it's just cosmic stuff, dark matter, magic, and ruining. A special kind of ruining only I can do. The ruining I am doing will be my undoing, I guess. And then we'll talk to the, we'll have a shout, you know, I'll pray to the old gods and the new, or speak with them as you, if you prefer. And then I'll say some thank yous and some good nights. So we'll be here. If you can fall asleep and drift off, the whole idea is it takes your mind off stuff. I bet you during that ramble, the people that the podcast drives crazy stop playing it. So that's good. If you're still listening, you might be skeptical, you might be curious, and those are understandable reactions, but ideally you haven't thought about all that other stuff, so you can just kick back. You don't got to take me, you know, you don't got to take me seriously. You don't have to listen to me fully. You don't have to fall asleep. This isn't like a sleep solution. It's just kind of, I call it a sleep offering. I'm going to ramble for about 2 hours total on Game of Thrones. And at any point, you can drift off, but if you can't sleep, I'll be here the whole time. But you don't feel any pressure to stay awake and don't feel any pressure to sleep. That's the deal. I'll be here. I'll be giving it my best. I'll be giving it my all. But you just kick back. That's the deal. I'm glad you're here. I appreciate you stopping by. I really do. And I really hope I really yearn to help you fall asleep. So let's keep moving. Housekeeping. I want to thank Carl W., who edited this episode, Chris Posterson from Sounds Like an Earful Podcast, who does the theme music. I want to thank Scotty and Jennifer on my honor, on my artwork, or our artwork. I want to thank Jonathan Mann, the mystery bard on the lullabies. You can commission a song from him at jonathanmann.net. Father's Day's coming up, hintity hint. I want to thank, who else do I want to thank? Oh, our moderators over at sleepwithmepodcast.com/nods. That's a listener's Facebook group. And it's moderated over there by Laura, Jennifer B., Julie C., Summer, and Sarah. And then there's a subreddit over at sleepwithmepodcast.com/reddit. Latitude, F. Taco Choice, reach out to me if you're still active over there. Because I'm just trying to figure out how to handle that, but there's other people that are posting, so that's at sleepwithmepodcast.com/reddit, and I believe that is it, and let's keep this train of moving.
Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive. progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. All right, everybody, it is time to talk about tonight's sponsor, ZocDoc. And I think all of us have that family member that you tend to change the subject or kind of bend the truth around when they start asking, you know, for life updates. Oh, why are you still living at home? Oh, when are you doing this? Oh, what's your job again? And while grinning and bearing it with relatives like that is considered polite, there's no way you should be doing that with your doctor. You know, when you have questions or your doctor's asking you questions about your life, you want to have someone you feel comfortable enough to be honest with. And that's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not just talking about a few. We're talking about tens of thousands of doctors, all with verified patient reviews. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. And just like I said, we're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. And you can filter for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're looking for. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. And I love hearing from listeners who have tested out ZocDoc, whether they've gotten new insurance, they've moved to a new area, because they found out the same thing I have, how easy it is to use and how great it is to see all of your options. So we've tested it out. You should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/sleep and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/sleep. 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 Thanks, everybody.
All right, here we are. Season 6, episode 7. You know, bad news, only 3 episodes. I can't believe the time's passed. But we're talking about the broken man. And this episode opens, it reminded me when we first met the Potato Kid, because it has this very happy opening. It starts with an anvil and a barn raising or something, it feels like. Nails are getting pounded, everybody's so chipper and friendly, there's like lovely guitar music. And then we see the man we used to love to dislike, the character we, you know, love to, Ian McShane, a wonderful actor from Deadwood. And he seems to be at his best. He's like a good guy in this one. He's playing around. He's handing out tools. He's giving everybody, he's like, hey, buddy, buddy, you know, give punching people like the old kid punches in the side. And I said, at first I said, what are they building, a watchtower? It's a very green valley and everything looks well. And I said, man, okay, this is, you know, this isn't good, obviously. Like the last time we saw that was the Potato Kid. He said, mother, what is that, potatoes? Potatoes or whatever. And that didn't work out for anybody. But then we see people carrying a log. Then we see one man carrying a log. I still didn't know what was coming. I said, who's this man carrying a log? And then he drops the log. We see he's very large. And then he turns and it's Sandor Clegane, the hound. And you see he's breathing heavy. And it's a cold open. I think it's the first one of the season. I don't even know if that's what a cold open is, but, that's what I said. I said, that's Sandor. And I did not see this coming. Holy cow, was I surprised. And someone had even, you know, like they had guaranteed me like 2 seasons ago. And I said, no way, man, it's not going to happen. I love the hound, but it's not going to happen. Oh, spoiler alert, the hound's back. The hound's back on the show. To his breath, that's what the last thing I wrote, and then scribble, open, because he's breathing at the end. I put open, I called it a warm, cold open. Hound log, I put. Because we see the next scene is the hound hacking away at this log. And Ian McShane says, geez, you never seen anybody crack a thing like that. And we have this honest hound all of a sudden. Because he says, what happened to you? Who took you out? How many people was it? It must have been, and he goes, one person. Must have been a huge monster. And he goes, it was a woman. And Ian McShane gets a big laugh out of that. I didn't even realize till the second watching the irony. You know, it's like, oh, maybe it was, you know, that's like, you know, it could have been, he could have thought the hound was joking, but he's not. He's being totally honest. Then we have the hound eating alone. And Ian McShane comes over to make friends with him. We have a couple more scenes of a perfect life on this commune with Ian McShane. Fresh water, buffet, children, best Westeros, just like a little bit of, like Bissos, near Utopia. But he goes over, he's talking to the hound, he says, hey, you know, people are afraid of you, I guess. And then we get a little backstory. He says, geez, you know, I found you. You were in such rough shape. I was worried about you. But then, you know, you kept on fighting. You know, you kept getting healthier. He goes, I always wondered what kept you going. Also, he also touches the hound. The hound doesn't like that. The hound's like me. Please don't touch me. But he says, you know, what kept you going? And the hound says, hate. And the hound's eating the whole time, which makes it interesting. And Ian McShane says, well, there's a reason you're here. He goes, yeah, I'm big and I'm tough. You know, I'm tough to take out. And he goes, no, reason. He goes, the guys aren't done with you that yet. And Hound's like, yeah, I heard about that with Gads before, but it was a different God. And Ian McShane kind of drops some polytheism. He goes, yeah, I don't know much about the gods, which Hound's like, you're in the wrong line of work. And he goes, yeah, there's plenty of people that think they know everything. He goes, I don't really know the gods. He goes, I don't know if it's seven gods or one god, Lord of Light. He goes, maybe it's all the same thing. I don't know. And this kind of speaks to some, you know, it's something maybe some people struggle with. Well, but there's something more powerful than us. And then he drops in, and whatever it is they got planned for Sandor Clegane. And so he's like, I'm on to you, you know. This guy's also, I wrote, he's also the anti-sparrow. And then the hound actually has a question, which is interesting. He has this inquiry. He goes, well, if the gods are real, how come they haven't punished me? And Ian McShane says, they have, you know, don't you believe that? So I thought that was nice. And then we have the moment with the hound just contemplating, not eating, thinking, a long moment, actually, a few seconds. Then we have Marjorie. She's reading from the seven-pointed star and thinking, or is she posing? Like, is she voguing, kind of? Her back's the door. Sparrow comes through the door. Goes, oh, what are you reading? She goes, the Book of the Mother, Your Holiness, chapter 3, verse 12. And he starts, oh, water rounds the stone, smoothing. And Marjorie picks up, memorized, smoothing what was jagged. So does a woman's love calm a man's brute nature. A white wife salves her husband's wounds. A mother sings her song to sleep. So interesting subtext maybe there. He says, oh, you learn quickly. And then they talk about religion and the sparrow said. He goes, yeah, there's some people that know everything, but they don't actually practice what they read. And there's some people who can't read who understand the Father's wisdom. And Margie's like, well, I used to pretend I loved the poor, but I didn't. You know, they grossed me out. And the sparrow's good here. It's just like the mass of gray, you know, that it's not all or all good or all bad. He goes, you know, yeah, they're hard to love, but, you know, because they are us without all our stuff. You know, without perfume. And then he says, can I ask you a personal question? I thought this was a little strange, the wording. And even Margie's like, what? And he goes, well, Tommen ratted out to me that you're not making love in the marriage bed. And she goes, no. And then we get to I said, time for a little patriarchy here. He goes, well, you have a duty, Your Grace, to your husband, to your king, your country, to the gods. And she goes, well, I'm not feeling any desire. And he says, Congress does not require desire on the woman's part, only patience. And I said, well, geez, it doesn't take patience with me, believe me. But, no offense, Tom, and I'm just guessing, but anyways, that's very patriarchal. We don't care. He's basically saying, but there's a strategic level. He goes, we need the kings to have an heir so we can keep up our work. And she goes, I'm sorry. Like sometimes the true path is hard to find. And this is when, then you go back on the story, because it says, harder to find and still harder to walk upon, but you've made great progress. And then the sparrow goes the other way, because he says, well, I just hope your grandmother follows your lead. And she goes, my grandmother? He goes, well, yeah, she's a sinner. You know, we got to help her out. I'm worried about her, you know, veiled threat. He says, you got to teach her, you know, in a new way. I also was like, again, who plays whom? At the beginning, I like how Marjorie's hands are interlocked. Her eyes really matched her dress. I thought that was beautiful. I was thinking about congressing, you know, with her eyes. And but then we have grandmother and Septa Unella and Marjorie. Marjorie has this gray pendant on. I guess that's really observing her closely. And, you know, there's like this little power struggle between the three of them. And Marjorie's like, Grandma, why don't you just leave if you're not going to... And Grandma's, you know, after Septa Unella and worried her granddaughter's been brainwashed. But she's like, go back to Highgarden. And then she's like, what about Loras? And Marjorie seems to have written off Loras, at least in this scene. And she's like, he has to, you know, take heed of his sins. And I say, really? And Marjorie drops some, like, faux page. She goes, your place is at home, Grandma. And she goes, I'll never leave you, never. And she says, you must. And then she passes her a note, and she says, go home. Find comfort in prayer and good works. The mother watches over us all. And then I didn't know Septa Unella, you know, I'm worried that the Septa saw it because I don't trust nuns. And she says, I'll see you soon, grandmother. And she says, let's pray, Septa Unella. And then she goes outside and looks. For a while, Marjorie was fighting off tears and really composing herself. I thought that was great acting, too. And then I was expecting the note to be something I would understand, but it was just a rose. But her grandmother got it. I said, is that a code or just something obvious? I mean, I know they're Queen of Thorns. Then we have, we're talking war with the free folk, with Giant and Tormund. And John needs them. And Tormund's very eloquent here. Dim Dobble or something's the other guy. He says, hey, this guy, you know, gave everything up for us. If it wasn't for him, we'd be toast. And they're like, well, there's not many of us left. We don't want to be running around working for the humans. And then Jan says, well, we're all in this together. That's what everybody's got to understand. You got to help because there's no other choice. Because otherwise there won't be any of us with the Night King. And the Giant's like, I'm in. And then Tormund, you know, says, I'm in too. And then everybody's like, okay, let's do it. And then at the end, when Tormund's walking away, John says, you know, are you guys really going to back me up? He goes, oh, we're not clever like you Southerners. When we say something, we'll do it. And then there's a big sigh by Jon Snow at the end. Then we have Cersei and the Queen of Roses, or Queen of Thorns. This season, for some reason, I cannot remember her name for the life of me. And Cersei rolls up with the mountain. And very confident, but still, I guess, a little bit tentative. And she says, yeah, I heard you're leaving King's Landing. And your grandmother says, I don't, you know, it's none of your business. And she goes, well, you're going to just leave your grandson? And she goes, well, he's in there because of you. Quit acting. This is a really good scene, really fun, depending on your feelings about Cersei. And she goes, this is all your fault, Cersei. The High Sparrow's in charge because of your machinations. And both our houses are, because of you and your stupidity, are on the edge. And Cersei tries to play, you know, play with her. She says, oh, yeah, you're right. I made a terrible mistake. I carry it with me every day. And she says, good. And Cersei's like, yeah, I brought all these fanatics in. And, you know, we're in this together, though. We need each other. And then there's a moment, and she says, the Queen of Thorns says, I wonder if you're the worst person I've ever met, which was just so wonderful. True, too, maybe. She says, at a certain age, it's hard to recall, but the truly vile do stand out through the years. And she goes, do you remember the way you smirked at me when my grandson and granddaughter got taken away? I do. I'll never forget it. And then Cersei just still says, thinks she's like, you love your granddaughter. I love my son. It's the only truth I know. We must defend them. And she says, no, I'm leaving town before this shoeless zealot gets me. And you better get out of here too, if you're so smart. And Cersei says, I'm never leaving my son. And she says, what do? You have no support. No one. Your brother's gone. Rest of your family doesn't like you. People don't like you. You're surrounded by enemies, thousands of them. What are you going to do, take them all off? You've lost. It's the only joy I can find in all this misery. Oh, I also, I don't know how many people watch, Silicon Valley. One, you got to check out my friend Anne, who's been on Silicon Valley. Playing a reporter, awesome job, or blogger, I guess, a reporter, I'd say. But Cersei, especially in this scene, reminds me a lot of T.J. Miller's character. If you watch both shows, rewatch this scene, and she's rocking a little T.J. Miller action, which I thought was really fun. And then you say, wow, those two are a lot alike, at least in this. I mean, usually Cersei's more effective, with her planning, but at least at this moment, I guess, because she's down, and that's his normal status. He's more likable, I'd say. I'd rather, but then we have, I can't read Joy. Oh, the only Joy. Then we have the line of Lannister soldiers, and at the head is Bronn and Jaime. Of course, Jaime's too handsome to wear a helmet. He says, are you kidding me? Look at this. This is a face that launched 100 whatever. But it's like a long line of soldiers. It was good to have Bronn back, but I don't know. This wasn't exactly, him at his best, especially now he's kind of burdened with Jaime instead of adventuring with him. You know, but he says, geez, this is the worst. You know, now I'm a knight. I'm stuck with you. You never followed through on anything. I'm not getting paid. And Jamie's like, well, Lannister out. And he goes, don't say it. I'm fed up. Then we go down, and this is a little like Monty Python-esque, these two Frey boys that are total buffoons. Let's see. Knights don't get paid. Yeah, Jamie rolls up to the Freys of Python. That's what I put. And they have Lord Edmure, and they're like, Blackfish, come out, or we're going to take out your nephew, or whatever. Blackfish is all cool, kind of channeling a little Sean Connery, I think. Anyway, Edmure's shoeless, and Jaime rolls up on the ugly. Those guys are real ugly, too. And Jaime tries to assert his authority and his good-lookingness. There's a slow pull close-up on Jaime. And he says to the, you know, he says, go get the black, set me a meeting with the Blackfish, you know. And he says, okay. Then we have Bear Island and Lady Mormont. So then we go from Monty Python to this scene felt a little bit Wes Anderson-like in a good way. Because we have this young queen, or I guess the queen of Bear Island, or the authority leader of Bear Island, I guess you'd say, Lady Mormont, the last, she's related to Jorah, He said, you better don't, you know. And it's like, it looked like a Star Wars set almost. It's like this castle above these waterfalls. Very lovely. Waterfall castle. Welcome to Bear Island, she says. And they're all trying to compliment her on how pretty she is. And she's like, none of my relatives are pretty. And they're like, oh, you're a great warrior. She goes, oh, yeah, Rob took care of all the good warriors in our family. And they're like, oh, yeah, we work for your uncle and all that. And she goes, great, anyway. And they're like, well, I heard you love Starks. She goes, yeah, real Starks. She goes, you're a Snow and she's a Bolton. Or are you a Lannister? I've heard conflicting reports. And she goes, we're here for an allegiance. She goes, you're here for my men. And they say, well, we got to stop Ramsay. And they have Rick and his prisoner. And they go, what you need to understand is, and she goes, I understand. I'm in charge of Bear Island. And I got to keep the people of Bear Island safe. And I love that Bear Island. That sounds like a nice place. So then, you know, we got to learn, you know, best place to learn interpersonal relations. Actually, this episode, we get a double truth, but for the time being, it's time for some Onion Knight truth telling and, you know, Harvard negotiation project. Because, hey, excuse me, my lady, I'm Davos of House Seaworth. And she goes, don't ask your maester, you know, it's new. She goes, all right, Davos of Seaworth. Because he goes, I think I understand how you feel. And he goes, well, you never thought you'd be in this position. You're in charge of all these lives. He goes, I never thought. He goes, I'm a crabber's son. He uses that old crabber's son, smuggler. And he goes, this isn't somebody else's war. It's our war. You know, a lot on the line here. He goes, your uncle trusted Jon Snow. He goes, and Jon Snow's made some sacrifices. And he goes, this is the big war, you know, the Night King. He goes, this is it. This is the trouble. We need to stand together. And right when he seals the deal, she's watching the maester leave, leans in to tell Lady Mormont something, and she raises her hand. It was the best. It was awesome. Rewatch it. She's like, that reminded me of Wes Anderson, something about her young authority. And just to kind of, I don't know, I liked it a lot. And then, what did I say? One last joke. What does that mean? Complaint by onions. She's like, yeah, we got like 60 guys we could give you. And they're like, 60,000? Like, no, 60 guys. And that's the last joke about Onion. He goes, well, if they're half as ferocious as their lady, the Boltons are doomed. Then we have the Kingfish and Kingslayer and the Blackfish meeting. And there was an extra few minutes Jamie spent. I wonder if it was foreshadowing, looking at the drawbridge in the water. He rode his white horse up there. And then you look down. And the Blackfish strolls out. And he really cuts Jamie down. He says, hey, did you, I thought you had a vow to take care of Sansa and Arya. This is what Blackfish says to Jamie. He goes, where are they, you know? And Jamie's like, oh, I don't have them. He goes, oh, so we let you go to help them. You want to come back into captivity? And he goes, well, I'm here for the castle, you know, for the Freys. He goes, you're trespassing. And the Blackfish goes, you know, I'm not leaving. And Jamie's like, well, I'm going to have to, you know, take the castle then. And he goes, come on, let's just work this out. He goes, on my honor, I'll work it out. He goes, bargaining with oathbreakers is like building on quicksand. And he goes, well, there's no more war. You know, why are you going to fight? He goes, the Blackfish says, as long as I'm standing, the war is not over. This is my home. He goes, go for it, bro. You got 2 years, Kingslayer, because that's how long it's going to take you. And then Jaime tries to, you know, turn Blackfish's men against him by yelling. And he says, well, why'd you meet with me? He goes to size you up, and I'm disappointed. Then we have Lord Glover, who's just, he's like, no way. And it's starting to look like John and Sansa's cause is strained. A lot of Rob's mistakes are still haunting them. Sansa tries to use the Stark name, but this Glover guy is like, no. Like, he won't help. Then we see black sails at the Bridge of Volantis, I think, and they had gold squids on them. And Reek Theon, we see Reek Theon is a broken man, not just Hound, but Reek Theon. I don't know what that says. Theon posting. I don't know what that means. Theon's posting. But Theon's just stressed out, you know. They're at this thing. It's all crazy. They're on the run. And his sister's like, you know, I'll never hurt you, little brother. But she's still insulting him, and she's making him drink. And she goes, you know, I know you had some bad years, Theon, but you got to get tough. He goes, bad years? Are you kidding me? Because you have no idea what I've been through. And then she says to him, if you're so broken, then just quit, you know. And I say, okay, like, okay, there's a broken man. Poor Theon. Even his sister, kind of with him, but kind of not. And she's just, you know, yelling at him. But also a little, what do you call that? Not backstory, the other one. Because they're like, all right, let's go deal with the Dragon Queen. We'll steal that idea from Uncle Jerkface. Then we're at Stannis's old camp with the Onion Knight and John and Sansa. And Onion Knight's like, this is a pretty good natural fortification. But they're like, we got to get moving. All right, so, and we're back at Stannis's camp, which Onion Knight's like, oh, this is a great natural fortification. But they're like, yeah, we got to get out of here with the snow and stuff. But we notice Sansa's not like a big Davos fan. And it's because Davos is like, yeah, we'll still work this out, John. You know, we got a couple, you know, 33,000 people almost. If we're careful, we'll have a chance. And then you can see the soldiers not getting along. You wonder if this spot is just bad luck. Especially since Ramsay came there and messed everything up, you say. But she says, geez, you like this guy? He just got 62 men from a 10-year-old. He goes, well, he's loyal to Stannis. She goes, Stannis, John. She says, so it's Sansa's turn to be truth-telling. She goes, Stannis lost the Blackwater, took his own brother out. He didn't make it. She goes, we need more men. And he goes, there's not time. She goes, I think we could find some more men. I have a secret plan going. And then Davos is trying to break everybody up. And then John goes over there. And then Sansa takes a look at, these crows. And she says, Oh, I forgot. This was the so Sansa looks at the ravens, and then she writes the second note of the episode because I forgot to mention that a Lady of Thorns, the Queen of Thorns, was writing a note when Cersei came in the room. I forgot to mention that. So it's our second scroll of the episode, second scroll writing, neither of which I could read, but and I didn't look in the internet. I think people were trying to figure it out, but I put to whom. Both of them, I wonder, you know, because when we saw Tywin writing it, that was big time, you know. He was really up to it. When Tywin Lannister writes a scroll, things happen. Then we're back at like a community circle with the Hound and the Prophet. And the Hound's like watching a distance. The Prophet's kind of talking about his past and how he wasn't a good man in the past. He was a coward and a jerk and a thief, and how he was acting against even the animals act in the best interests of their species and, you know, their own lives, but he's like, he didn't. And I really like this. This is powerful, and especially powerful as it played out, because the Hound started kind of relating with what he was saying and some of the pain of the past. And then he says, you know, he usually gives this empowering message. He says, well, just there's all you can do with it. He goes, I can't do anything to change the past now. He goes, all I can do is use the best time, make the best use of the time. I have to put some goodness in the world. He says, that's all any of us can do, right, Hound? He goes, it's never too late to change, to start helping people. It's never too late to come back. And then we see these three horses come. And this part, this one took me a few watches to figure out. I missed some stuff, I think, the first time. The shame's so heavy, all they can do. Bring a little goodness. To Chalk House, Horse Whinnies, Horse Whinnies. And he said, oh, because he closed the horse when he's in, he says, it's not about the gods answering your prayers. It's not even about the gods, it's about you. And then three protectors of the people roll up and they want some free stuff. But, you know, that guy, he's like, we have enough people to take care of. We can't give you any free stuff. And they go, okay, but be careful. The night is dark and full of terrors. And the Hound doesn't like it. He goes back to wood cutting. Chopping wood. But there's some lines like one of the guys says, well, hey, we're here for your protection. And the prophet's like, well, who are you protecting us from? But I guess that the night is dark and full of terror is what gave it away that they served the fire god. I didn't realize that. Because he says, seven save your friends. And then the Hound, he goes to talk to the Hound when he's chopping wood. The Hound says, what are you doing? Seven save you, friends. He goes, I'm a septon. What do you want me to say? And he goes, they don't believe in your seven. They will follow the red god. They're from the Brotherhood, which is disappointing to me because I really liked the Brotherhood up until this episode. I really liked that character. That reminds me of if William Hurt and Jeff Daniels had a child. Or is it not? Is it Jeff Daniels? Yeah. Like, the actor that plays with the, one of the Brotherhood, the guy with the flaming sword, I forgot his name, but anyway, not important right now. I'm sure maybe we'll see him soon. Not going to be good. But he says, well, we got nothing for him. And he goes, well, that you got food, you're hiding steel. And, you know, there's trouble. And the Septon says, we can't fight them. And the Hound says, well, you could. And he goes, well, these people don't know how to fight. He goes, you do. And he goes, I'm done fighting. Violence is a disease, and you can't cure a disease by spreading it to more people. And the Hound says, well, you can't cure it by not making it either. And he says, come on, let's go eat dinner. And the Hound starts chopping more wood. He goes, it's going to be a cold night. We'll need more firewood. And then McShane says, I'll save you some stew, maybe even a little ale, buddy. Then we have Arya, and she's like, finds this Westerosi captain. And she says, hey, I need, he's talking about Theon's fleet, you know, the Iron Fleet's in Slaver's Bay. But Arya says, hey, I want to book a passage on a ship. He goes, you can't afford it. And she gives him some coins. He goes, where'd you get these? She goes, why, what does it matter? And he goes, well, you can, for this much, you can get a hammock and we'll leave in a couple days. Since she gives him a bigger bag, she goes, nope, a cabin. We leave at dawn. And then she takes the bag back. She goes, see it sunrise. And then she goes and looks at the Braavos, the statue of Braavos, I forgot what it's called, the Watcher of Braavos. Titan of Braavos, there it is. And then she runs into her nemesis, who has too easy a time, so Arya gets in the water. Staris Cavradad. Oh, the stairs are covered in algae. And then she wanders through the marketplace. And then we have the Hound chopping wood, and he hears some trouble, but it's too late. And then he goes back to camp. He realizes everybody at camp's gone. And he says, well, I guess I'll turn back into the Hound again. So then he says, well, let me get that axe and chop some more wood for the Brotherhood, I believe. And that's the end of the episode. And I guess, you know, it's usually this 8th and 9th episodes are the most impactful, so we should be ready for everything coming up here this week and next week. I'm excited. I mean, well, only a little bit because I don't want it to end. But I'm also, you know, I'm excited. I just wish I just can't deal with the whatever comes after, you know. I can't get to, but I got to deal with it. You know, I got to grow up. You know, there's only 10 episodes. Nothing I can do about it. It's not on my control. Got to be more like Ian McShane, I guess. All right, so tonight we're talking episode 400. We're going to hopefully we'll have time to touch on all this. Blackfish, Brendan Tully. Cold. Why was this episode a cold open? Escape to Witch Mountain, the Ponte Vecchio, Algae. And then hopefully we'll have time to talk about Deadwood and TJ Miller. All right, so I thought I'd just double check on the Blackfish. I think I probably talked about him a while ago, but I said, well, I already forget. I don't even know, like, what the heck is the Blackfish. So let's find out some more, right? Brendan Tully, B-R-Y-N-D-E-N Tully, popularly called the Blackfish, according to Wikia, Game of Thrones Wikia, played by Clive Russell, Knight and member of House Tully, younger brother of Hooster Tully, and uncle of Caitlin, Lysa, and Edmure. Oh, Edmure's Caitlin's brother, huh? Or maybe cousin, huh? After the Red Wedding, Blackfish retakes River Run from House Frey, becoming the leader and lord of House Tully. A biography, Brendan Tully is the younger brother of Hooster, lord of River Run, current head of House Tully, respected knight, formidable battle commander, distinguished himself in the War of the Nine Penny Kings 40 years before the War of the Five Kings. Brendan and Hooster often argued, oh, because Brendan was never married. I kind of remember this. When Brendan returned home from the War of the Nine Penny Kings, Hooster had arranged for him to marry Bethany Redwine. Red wine. Stay close to the Blackfish. Don't let him of wealthy and powerful House Redwine. Brendan refused this generous match, however, refusing to be told when and whom to marry. You hear that, jerks? People don't like to be told when and whom they can marry. Anyway, Hooster was angry that Brendan, you know, told him what he had to do and just forced him into a marriage alliance to improve fortunes. So he ended up being the black goat of the Tully herd, as opposed to black sheep, I guess. Brendan joked that he given that Tully sigil is a trout, it'd be more fitting to say he's the Blackfish. Okay, nickname stuck, and he'd been the Blackfish ever since. Brendan accepted it, used it as personal heraldry. Like the standard Tully heraldry, he just swaps out a silver trout for a black one. Hooster would attempt to contact other arranged marriage alliances for years. Oh, yeah, I think I remember in this season 3, we talked about arranged marriages. So that's a little bit about Brendan Tully and the Blackfish. Now, next up, and this was a brief scene, but it caught, you know, some things catch my attention and I can't let them go. But when Arya is climbing out of the canal, there's a stairways down to the canal. Stairways to Canal, that was the rejected Zeppelin song. But she was paddling towards it. There was a lot of algae, I noticed, on the stairs of the canal stairs. They were stone or some sort of stone-like thing. What is that stuff? Something. I don't know what the heck that's called. Masonry or something. The stairs. And it was a green algae. And then you see and you say, man, like it's a little bit like moss, but it's not. So I said, what the heck is it? You know, what the heck is algae anyway? You hear stuff about it. But, you know, if you're like me, you say, what's it? It's either stuff some people put in smoothies. Did you guys know I worked at a smoothie place before Jamba Juice broke big? And, Yeah, and I was, and again, I said it wasn't too long. I think I made my way to in title only assistant manager. It was coffee and smoothies. So anyway, not important though. Anyway, so I went over to livescience.com. They've had some good stuff before. And this article is from June 4th, 2016. Holy cow, this just came out. What are algae? And I'll link to it in the show notes. I'll try to, you know, according to Live Science, so holy cow, they must have known I needed this. Algae are a diverse group of aquatic organisms, and they have the ability to conduct photosynthesis. Certain algae are familiar to people, for instance, seaweed, pond scum, oh boy, or algal blooms in lakes. However, there's a vast and varied world of algae that are not only helpful to us, but crucial to our existence. So the term algae covers many different organisms capable of producing oxygen through photosynthesis, but they're not necessarily closely related, but certain features unite them. Distinguishing them from other photosynthetic organisms, land plants. Primarily, algae are not highly differentiated in the way plants are. That is to say, they lack true roots, stems, and leaves, a vascular system to distribute nutrients. Second, and don't take this the wrong way, algae, many algae are unicellular, according to a 2014 article in Current Biology. They occur in various forms and sizes. They can exist as single cells, or it can be macroscopic and multicellular, living colonies. Take on a leafy appearance like seaweeds, such as giant kelp. Picoplankton. Oh, that's so cute, picoplankton. Come here. Come here, let me give you a hug, picoplankton. Which are between 0.2 and 2 micrometers, while fronds of giant kelp can be as large as 60 meters. And lastly, they're in a range of habitats, freshwater and saltwater. By virtue of these characteristics, the general term algae includes prokaryotic organisms, cyanobacteria, like blue-green algae, eukaryotic and other algae species. They don't form a natural group descended from a common ancestor. They're more in an informal group of algae. This is like complicated, that stuff. So I guess but there's a lot of different, you know, stuff, but let's find some general stuff. Habitat. They mostly live in aquatic habitats. But as you know, aquatic can be a diverse term, freshwater lakes, saltwater oceans. They can exist in a variety of temperatures or oxygen and carbon dioxide concentrations, even acidity and turbidity. There's giant kelp 200 meters below the polar ice sheets, according to algae. There's even unicellular green algae species found in hypersaline environments like the Dead Sea. Algae can survive on land and some unexpected places like trunks, fir, and snowbanks, hot springs, soil, even desert crust. But mostly, they live independently. Independent algae. Yeah, that's what I like. Various growth forms, but they can form a symbiotic relationship with a variety of non-photosynthetic organisms, mollusks, fungi, lichen, and sponges even. I guess that was a failed children's book I worked on, the algae and the sponge. Because there's no conflict. They lived in perfect harmony. So no publisher. They said, okay, wait, you're the boring guy, and you're pitching us a book. Okay, so what happens in the story? They said they live in perfect, it's perfect for, perfect lesson for children. Two creatures live symbiotically, the algae and the sponge, for, you know, forever, and they also benefit the greater environment. And they said, I thought this guy, and they said, I thought you were banned from our office. I said, yeah, you said one more, you're going to give me one more try. The algae and the sponge. I have a list of names for both of them too, but you should know up front, they don't communicate because they just live in, you know, like I said, I mean, harmony would be a strong word. Symbiosis, I think, might be stronger than harmony. And the book is also just, it is 5,000 pages, but mostly there's just the two of them, you know, because I wanted to get different tones of sea color, you know, with different lights in the sea. I could do something, okay, one more. I could put like a fish that's like a Where's Waldo fish in there. And then it's hidden, you know, because I loved Richard Scarry as a child, those books. Okay, you saw Miss, yeah, okay, that didn't work. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there, but I just had a pitch in the middle of the podcast segment. So anyway, nutrition, you know, algae are capable of photosynthesis. They nourish themselves with light and carbon dioxide to generate carbohydrates and oxygen. However, there are algal species that need nutrition from outside sources. So they use heterotrophic strategies to acquire nutrients from organic material. Probably, you know, just like our friends that are living in together. Reproduction. Yeah, let's get to the good stuff already. Holy cow, right? This is a podcast for grown-ups. Algae are capable of reproducing through, wait a second, asexual or vegetative methods. I think I got a detention for displaying vegetative reproduction. You know, what was that, a zucchini? Anyway, not important. And via sexual reproduction. According to the authors of Algae, asexual production involves the production of a motile spore. Vegetative methods include simple cell division, mitosis, with an identical offspring and a fragmentation, and the fragmentation of a colony. Sexual reproduction, cover your ears because this has got the G word in here. Union of gametes produced individually in the parent through meiosis. Oh boy, oh, chicka chicka boom boom. Some algae's going down. So that's just a little bit about algae. There's probably tons more. You've heard of algal blooms, which get a bad rap for creating toxic conditions in oceans and lakes. But it's just the rapid growth of microalgae, which lead to the production of toxins and the disruption of the natural aquatic ecosystems, which increases the cost of water treatment. The blooms take on the color of the algae within them. They like to blame dinoflagellates and diatoms in freshwater cyanobacteria, cyan. I can't ever get that word. But it's mostly caused by nutrient pollution because there's too much nitrogen and phosphorus from those factory FARMS, maybe. So that's a little bit from Life Science. I'll link to it. I also have the Wikipedia article in there just in case you want to dig deeper. Now, this is a good, like a tangent. This is kind of just how, you know, if you want an inside look into my brain, you know, you'll probably need a doctor's prescription after that. But it just like, so they go to Bear Island, right? And I just thought that was such a cute name with such a cute leader. And then I wanted to sing, and I said, like, oh, to live on Bear Island, which is, like, based on Sugar Mountain, I think, is the Neil Young song. Yeah, Sugar Mountain. So I was singing that for a while and thinking, you know, fantasizing about living on Bear Island. And then I said, and then my brain said, you know, one of those short circuit sounds. I think they're, you know, the time to discuss this, but I think I may have a Tesla coil somewhere in my brain. That might be the issue. And it just randomly fires at different times. So I mean, that's a possibility of where this stuff comes from. But I said, what about that Escape to Witch Mountain? Did I ever see that movie? One. Two, did we have the book at my house? Three, I think I saw that movie and I can't remember it. What's going on with that? Is that when I had the Tesla coil? Because I think that movie came out right around when I was born. The novel was written before I was born. So let's just read about it. There's a novel by Alexander Key, according to Wikipedia, about two orphans, Tony and Tia, who have paranormal abilities. Tony's got telekinesis, and they can communicate via ultrasonic speech. Tia cannot speak normally. Where's Tia's power? I don't see it. Tia is not unusual in that respect. Well, we'll see what Tia's powers are. But there's a book, and then it sounds a little bit like Goonies. But there's a film in 75, Walt Disney Productions released a film also called Escape to Witch Mountain. Oh, Donald Pleasance was in it. Well, that's great news. But I can't remember, honestly. I can picture the movie, the VHS thing. And I know nowadays, like, a couple people are like, have you seen that? But yeah, so, you know, it sounds like an interesting movie. I mean, we'll check on Rotten Tomatoes after this. It was one of Disney's most successful live-action films. It was followed by two sequels, Return to Witch Mountain, 78, and then the television film in 82, Beyond Witch Mountain. Maybe I saw that one. And they had Betty Davis was in one of them, Christopher Lee. Wow, talk about a cast. And the leads were played by Ike Eisenman and Kim Richards. Betty Davis and Christopher Lee, holy cow. Eisenman and Richards also played siblings in another movie. In 82, there was a failed TV series pilot, Beyond Witch Mountain, which was a sequel. But the Tony and Tia parts were recast. Oh, Tracy Gold played Tia from Growing Pains. Interesting. It also contradicts the 78 sequel. So that's a problem. We don't want to talk about the plot in case you want to see it. There was a 1995 made-for-television movie based on the Alexander Key novel. And then there was a 2009 film, and that was called Race to Witch Mountain. It took place 30 years after the original film, Escape to Witch Mountain. It was directed by Andy Fickman and stars The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, Kieran Hines, Anna Sophia Robb, Alexander Ludwig, and Carla Gugino. And Kim Richard and Ike Eisman played smaller roles. It was released in 2009. The kids in that movie are called Sarah and Seth. They have a spaceship. And I don't know how that movie did. But over on Rotten Tomatoes here, as you know, I always like to see how the critics weigh in. According to, pop-up ad, sorry about that. Oh, at least it's for Zootopia. And then I accidentally clicked on it. These touch screens. This is a good movie, Zootopia, so I don't mind being, so Time Out said it's a Disney adventure with a lot going for it. Vincent Canby from New York Times, Disney production for children who will watch anything that moves. And I don't know if this is based on the current. Roger Ebert in 2004 said it's a sci-fi thriller that's fun and cheerfully implausible. Sarah Wenk from Common Sense Media, they don't make them like this anymore. Kevin Carr from 7M Pictures provides adventure and excitement. A lot of these, I don't know if these are actual real movie reviewers. No offense to the rest of And yeah, I don't want to spoil it here, but on the tomato meter, 76. I mean, that's, you know, I had trouble scoring 76s on a lot of, I don't know if anybody remembers, at some point in high school, they changed failing from 70 to 60. That worked out pretty good for me. Or maybe it was in middle school, 70 was like, so 69 in middle school was definitely failing, but 70 was passing. But then when I got to high school, or at some point in high school, it became 60 was passing and 59 was failing. So that was big, you know, big for me. 10 more points, you know, wiggle room. I think I talked about this on the podcast. This is my ego talking, but I'm pretty sure my math scores were so low that they reinstituted a policy where you couldn't on your report card get lower than a 50. Because I'm not kidding. I would get on these in high school math, like single digit results. And then, you know, maybe some in the 10s and the 20s, but that would be my grade for math out of 100, 20, you know, 25. That was my average. Just, you know, but I don't know what this has to do with which mountain. So, but yeah, that's a little bit about which mountain. I also want to talk about the bridge in Florence, the Ponte Vecchio. Because it reminds me of the bridge in Volantis, or it did. And I said, is that, like, I haven't been lucky enough to travel too much. I've been lucky enough to travel more than some. And I love the world. But, I had a brother who lived in Florence for a little while, so I got to visit him there. And it was a lovely, lovely city. And he, it's nice visiting when someone lives somewhere, because then you feel like, and I think we stayed for a couple weeks. So it was nice, you know, we loved going over the Ponte Vecchio. In the Ponte Vecchio, old bridge is a medieval stone closed spandrel segmented arch bridge over the Arno in Florence. This is on Wikipedia. Initially, it was occupied by butchers. Now it's more jewelers and souvenir stuff. Looking for an age on this thing. History and construction. It spans the Arno as narrowest point. It was believed that it was first built in Roman times when Via Cassia crossed the river at this point. The piers were of stone, the superstructure of wood. It first appears in a document of 996. Then it was destroyed in 1117, reconstructed again in 1333. Saved two of its central piers, rebuilt again in 1345. Bridge is like three segmental arches. The main arch has a span of 30 meters, 98 feet. It's always hosted shops and merchants who displayed their goods on tables. After they had this bar galo, Lord Mayor, Magistrate, something, I don't know, I don't understand that. It said that the original concept of bankruptcy originated here. It wasn't bombed during World War II. I remember hearing that when I was there. And it just is, it's cool. It's great to take pictures of it. It looks real cool. And it's a little piece of living history, I guess. And you say, oh, it's like the bridge in Volantis a little bit. I know Weiss and Benioff met and studied together in Ireland, but I wonder if they traveled to Italy together, you know, because this last few seasons has some, like, Italian, Mediterranean. Well, it's always said Mediterranean, but you have the canals of Bravos. I don't know, just curious. Speaking of decisions from Game of Thrones, I actually had to, like, usually I try not to read anything that's written about Game of Thrones this season. But, you know, there was a cold open this episode where the episode started before the opening scenes. And so I was like, I wondered if I typed in stuff in Google that wasn't effective, like Game of Thrones talks about why they do cold opens. Weiss and Benioff and cold open, stuff like that didn't work. But finally, this article came up, it was just recent, from June 6th by Gina Carbone, out of all things moviephone.com. And it says, it talks about, most episodes, but not every episode, has a clip of the previous episodes and then the map intro. But tonight's episode did not. Instead, it went straight with the scene with the hound, as we know. And Brian Cogman, who wrote the episode, confirmed that it was a sequence because of that with the hound and McShane quoting him. It was my favorite week on Game of Thrones because it's a beautiful little three-act play. Very much on purpose. It doesn't totally feel like Game of Thrones until the end. Paraphrasing. Ian McShane is a new age ex-warrior with a painful history. He's found his own flock. And he sees Sandor as a candidate, like a bit like himself. The hound starts to open up to him. Like he's the first and only friend he's had. And it's an interesting, Brian says it's an interesting relationship to explore. And the seasons have a light touch and gentleness and humanity and humor you don't normally find on the show. You know, but then the Brotherhood takes care of that. And, you know, the cycle restarts. But Cogman said, well, geez, they used a cold open because we figured it'd be more, it would make his reveal more impactful if they didn't see his McCann's name in the opening credits. And also if this article from Movie Film says, yeah, it would have been great if Ian McShane didn't spoil his role in advance. But I never read that, so it wasn't spoiled for me. So, I mean, that is, like, it's interesting. It makes me curious of the other cold opens they've done, though. That's what I was trying to get out of Google, but, you know, it didn't, you know. Well, yeah, I guess they say, geez, Booleen, and I say boo to Booleen because I don't, you know, it's too much thinking. And then it looks like we're short on time, but I'll link to Deadwood. I really couldn't find anything clear on why Deadwood was canceled, like, definitive, just a lot of, like, whatever circumstantial, like, just people talking about it. And to be honest, like, I can't fully speak in Deadwood because I never, as a sober person, I haven't watched it. I think I started watching it, and it's on my to-do list because when I went back, when it was on the air, I was watching it. I was just not fully present. So maybe one day we'll talk more about Deadwood because I think it's a very important show, very beloved show, very powerful, the acting and the performances and the quality of the cast. So there's that. And then T.J. Miller, there's actually this article just came out in the New Yorker, so I don't know if I should, I'll link to that in the show notes. There's also this, let's just touch a little bit on T.J. Miller, because I said, geez, it just reminded me of Cersei's performances of Ehrlich Bachman. So there's this NPR interview with him, and he's skipping to the middle. He's from Denver, 34 years old, and he went to Denver East High School. And his teacher, Melody Duggan, said that he was a typical class clown, but a little more intuitive and understands the frailty of human condition. She says Miller was absolutely fearless and didn't mind making a fool of himself. And Miller credits her, you know, with setting him forth on his path. She made him do musicals like Oedipus Rex so he would learn everything, you know, singing and Miller's mother's a clinical psychologist. She also tried to help him take it seriously, so he studied circus arts. He went to the British American Drama Academy in London to study being a Shakespearean clown, toured with Chicago's Second City, and they note kind of his observational humor is rarely cutting. You know, he's not a mean guy. You know, he's funny, but not mean. That's my kind of humor, too. Between movies, TV, stand-up, and commercials, Miller's on a roll, but he's hyper-focused on his quote-unquote mission statement. To become the best comedian, I must be well-rounded. According to Melody Duggan, his business acumen is something else. And he also talks about his role in Deadpool, and he says, quote, I'm a student of Nietzsche, and I'm interested in morality and mortality. And Deadpool uses all kinds of themes like that. Given Miller's cerebral approach to acting, it's not surprising he pursued a career in the psychology. That was his college major, and he thought he might follow in his mother's footsteps, but then he did the math. He goes, quote, "If you're a psychologist, you can instrumentally change people's lives for the better, but you can only do that for about 300 people to maybe 1,000 if you're really prolific. If you're a comedian, you can change people's lives for the better in much smaller increments, not for their life, but for 15 minutes or a half hour." He says, "If I can make someone laugh, I can lift them out of their fundamentally tragic existence. And for this comic, that's anything but meaningless." I really like that. That's a great, no wonder I like him so much. So that's a little, just a touch on TJ Miller to close out. All right, and let's keep the show moving. All right, Podman, are you ready for my adventure? I think so. I have your adventure. I mean, I have. Have you prepared an adventure for me? Well, I've prepared your journey on the road to self-discovery. Self-discovery is ready, Sir Tommen. Oh, very good, Podman. Are you still worried for me? Well, kind of. I mean, since I've relocated you to my place fictionally taking you out of, you know, I feel a little more comfortable. Oh, now that I'm living with you, your castle, as you call it. It has the screen thing, the magic mirror. So I like that. And in the mini magic mirror, which I can go. And then, you know, now that you sleep on the floor, Sir Pounce and I get the bed. It is a very nice bed you have. Oh, thanks, Simon. And so there's many things, and it's, the castle gets so cold, even the blankets can't keep the chill out. And then when it's hot, it's so hot. But here where you live, it is nice. And then there are all the cats that live by for support. But, I miss home. Well, I know, Tom, and I worry. Oh, Podman, I miss. Well, I don't know if I miss anyone. I mean, a part of me misses some things, but I think the part of me, do you remember we were talking about toothaches? I miss Westeros like I miss a toothache, Podman. I know a distinct missing. I know it's missing. And I say, I wonder what that felt like. But then I imagine, I say, oh, that I don't like toothaches. Let's not talk about this, Tom, because just in case. I don't know if the idea of me relocating you out of Westeros is going to sit too well with, the three heroes of mine. Oh, you have other heroes other than me. Well, you and Sir Pounce. No, I mean heroes in a different way, not heroes of bravery and friendship, a different kind of heroes. Remember I was telling you about, the R.R. Martin and Weiss and Benioff, the people who won't take your calls. They say, why did you call him again? And you said, why did you use that thing? You said, hey, DB, it's me here. Well, I thought he'd think it was funny. Oh, Podman, you should not try to be funny. You just be yourself. That's all you've... Mr. Pounce, the Podman's trying to be... He thinks he needs to work to be funny. Yes, Sir Pounce. Podman, you are not funny. You are funny. You know what I mean? Yeah, unfortunately, I do know what you mean. So don't try so hard. You don't need to do anything to make people laugh. See, I'm laughing. Oh, it is like missing a toothache. Podman, you are like missing, not like a toothache. You are almost the opposite. You are the greatest fool. I'll be honest, now that I'm away, I feel like you are the greatest fool a boy could have asked for. So thank you, Podman. Wow, thanks, Tom, because I guess I do feel like you missed out on your own fool. Oh, see what I mean, Podman? Sir Pounce, did you hear that?
This man is my friend.
Yes, yes. I'm not missing a fool. Oh, no, Podman. I've had him for a very long time, ever since the day you crashed that time machine into my room, looking for Mother's room. That was the day I knew I found my fool. Anyway, let's get it going, Padme. Try not to be too funny, though. Okay. All right. I'm ready when you are, Tommen. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we interrupt your regularly scheduled program for another episode. Welcome to another day of K-Pounce Radio, the radio of best friendship, where boys and cats can adventure in friendship and bravery. K-Pounce Radio. Radio for boys and cats and friends everywhere. K-Pounce Radio. Okay, Padman. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Sir Tommen and Pounce in the Road to Self-Discovery. When we last left off our heroes, they had been trapped in a deep cave-in. Oh, Padman, that was like five episodes. Mud rushed into the temple, Tommen and Sir Pounce had only just barely escaped. They were covered in mud, and they were climbing, and they were still trying to get past the last walls of confusion. Oh, Padman, what are you doing? Oh, I forgot that we're going to use the adventure out of this. Okay, just pretend you're a wizard then, okay? Okay, and now let's join our heroes on the road to self-discovery. Oh, Sir Pounce, I'm covered in mud. Are you covered in mud, too? Man. Yes, we need some baths. Where is Zero? I don't think I want to see a wizard. I want to see Zero. Oh, Zero, come here. Here he comes running. Oh, hello, Sir Pounce. Hello, Tommen. How can I serve you? Well, we need a bath, but first I'd like to read from the book of Seven-Pointed Star. Do you have a copy of it handy? For I need to know what tactic I should use for the next problem I'll face. Yes, Sir Tommen, it says, disdain things you cannot have. Ignoring them is the best revenge. By acknowledging a petty problem and you give it existence and credibility, the more attention you pay on an enemy, the stronger you make him. And a small mistake is often made worse and more visible when you try to fix it. It is sometimes best to leave things alone. If there is something you want but cannot have, show contempt for it. The less interest you feel, the more superior you seem. Okay, so disdain things I cannot have. Ignoring them is the best revenge. Oh, mother must have really loved me then, Sir Pounce. Ma'am. Okay, well, I think I get it. Okay, Zero, where could Sir Pounce and I have a bath? Well, we cannot have you having a bath. You must keep your journey to the roads of self-discovery. You have to pass the columns of confusion. No, we're going to take a bath. I have no desire for any more confusion. I have a desire to take a bath, a warm bath, a preferably hot bath. And Sir Pounce would like to... Sir Pounce, do you want to get in a bath? Well, no, Sir Pounce just wants some place where Sir Pounce can lick and bathe Sir Pounce while I take a bath, and Sir Pounce will hack up a lot of mud. Okay, so Zero, go get me a bath, and also I like it to smell good, and not like this place, it smells so dirty. We have no bathing facilities. This is a temple... The only place to go is past the columns of confusion. Okay, well, is that where the bath is? Because you just said there is no bath, so which one is it? Well, the treasure of self-discovery is beyond the columns of confusion. And then through the next stage. I don't have any desire to deal with any of that things. So how do I get out of here? I will just leave. I would much rather leave. Could you show me how to get out of this temple the quickest way? So Pounce and I will pay someone to create a bath for both of us. Go right this way, Sir Tommen, and pass these columns to the right. Okay, and that's where I'll find the exit. Can you send for the Padman to prepare a way for me? Well, you know what, Zero? How much? I'll pay you. You come along with me. Okay, Sir Tommen. And don't talk like that. Just be yourself, Zero. How many times do I have to tell you? Oh, dear. Suddenly the room has changed. Did we pass? You tricked me to pass the columns. Mother? Is that mother down there? Mother, is that you? Oh, she's ignoring me. Well, I'll just ignore. And there's Marjorie with mother. What are they doing? Oh, no, that's the blue-faced man. But that's the blue-faced man, not Sir Gregor. Oh, but they have Sir Gregor's dog. Oh, dear. Well, they're petting the dog. But he would want his dog back. He doesn't want to. He's not the blue-faced man. Zero, what do you think of all this? I don't know, Sir Tom, and it's confusing. Sir Bounce, what do you think? Man, so man. Yes, it's weird as heck, man. Marjorie, hello, Marjorie. Okay, we'll walk towards them. They don't seem to be hearing me. Mother, hello, mother. Marjorie, what are you doing with Sir Gregor's dog? He's just the Gregor. I forget, because this blue face. Hello, blue faced man. I'm no longer. Dear, I do feel strange about you. What are you all laughing about? Hello, mother. I'm right here. Marjorie. My dear. It's good to see you. I've missed you. What are you all laughing about? It's a drawing of me, and you're laughing at it. And you have Sir Gregor's dog, and it's the Gregor. It says on here, this is not your dog. Hello, they're ignoring me. You know, I don't appreciate being ignored, mother. Marjorie, you're my wife. Why are you ignoring me? A blue-faced man, you could keep ignoring me. Oh, hello. Oh, you're showing me attention, though, Gregor's dog. Okay, thank you for that lick. So, Bounce, what do you think's happening? I don't know. I'm feeling like I miss Mother and Marjorie, though, now. Mother, Marjorie, could I go back to Westeros with you? Oh, now you're looking at me and smiling. Oh, both of you. And the blue-faced man. Okay, wait a second. I don't understand. You're not speaking. But you're acknowledging me and the Gregor's dog. Oh, so me and Gregor's dog have to come with you, too. Okay. And you're pointing at Sir Pounce and Zero, the pod man. Zero, that's mother's laughing, even though it's weird. She's still laughing that you're a zero, Zero. Oh, but you're saying I can't take Sir Pounce and I have to take the Gregor's dog with me to West. But it's Gregor's dog. He lives here with Mr. Ray. Not in this, you know, kind of like I moved in with the pod man. We have a clubhouse, you know, mother. I mean, it's just a tent, but Gregor, last week, Gregor and I and I made the pod man sleep outside the tent. It's called a tent. And Ray had his own tent. And they seem to like me. I don't know, though, mother. You're right. I should go with you and Marjorie. Oh, Marjorie, you look so lovely. Thank you for smiling at me with your doe-like eyes. Oh, yes, I've learned flattery about while I've been gone from you. I've learned some things I could teach you to. Mother, I've learned, you might be impressed. Maybe I should go back. I think you'll be impressed with how I've self-discovered, mother. I'm not the boy who you think I am. I am much more competent. And so, I don't know, are you not allowed to speak? So, yes, okay, I could come with you only if I take the Gregor's dog. Well, no, that would be wrong, and I cannot leave Sir Pounce. Okay, I could take Sir Pounce and the dog. Okay. Okay, you're going now out this magical door. And Marjorie, what is that dance you are doing? Is that come this way dance? Okay. Blue-faced man is walking arm in arm with mother. I don't like that, though. Oh, good. Stop doing it. Perfect. Okay, you're through the door. Oh, is that a table of chickens and sweets? Yes, I don't know. I cannot. Should I leave? So, Pounce, what do you think? Should I take the Gregor's dog? No, this is wrong. No, I won't go. I won't do it. I will.
Oh, Marjorie, what are you? You're going to feed chickens to the blue-faced man instead of me? Mother, you're sitting on his lap. That is strange. Oh, you're also feeding him. Are those spice cakes? Oh, those look good. Well, you know what? I'll just ignore you because I don't care. You know what? Feed all the chickens you want. Feed the blue-faced man, but I won't take this dog. You know, I don't need you three, to be honest. Watch this, but zero. I'm learning. I'm learning from the seven-pointed star. As a matter of fact, I can't even see you three. Hopefully this dog... You know what? Sir Pounce, go find the Gregor and go bring him here, because we'll probably need... I think we need to keep him with us for the rest of the adventure, because he's so big. But yeah, is there, Podman, is there any rooms with chickens? I smell some chicken, but I don't care. Are they looking at me, Podman? Oh, Zero. Sorry, Zero. Are they looking at me? Look at this dog. It's so lovely. You know, I don't even care, honestly. You know, because we have fun at our clubhouse, right, Zero? Yeah. Oh, yes, Sir Tom, in the road to self-discover, I could be full fun if you find it. Correct. Oh, there's Gregor. Yeah, Gregor, I found your dog. You find dog. Thank you. Who is that in that room? Well, that's nobody. It's a blue-faced man. Remember I was telling you about the blue-faced man? Yes, blue-faced man. Yes, so he's in there with some people, but it's an illusion. No, not illusion. I just tell they're real. Oh, no, it's illusion. Ah, it's real. Okay, well, even if it's real, it doesn't matter. But Zero, do you think it's real? Yes, it's real, but it... well, yes, it doesn't matter anyway, because I wanted you to have your dog back. They tried to take your dog away, and I said, no, this is the Gregor's dog. Ah, yes, Gregor's dog. This Gregor's dog, my friend, my best friend, but your friend too, Pounce and Zara. Okay. Well, yes, we have adventures to do. So anyway, let's get on to it. Let's go. You know, I needed a bath, but I feel fine. A little crusty, but ready to go. Okay, that's good for this week. Thank you. Yeah, are they gone now, Podman? Oh, honestly, I forgot to... Oh, yeah, they are gone. I totally forgotten. Yeah, so did I for maybe a second. Though I still smell Marjorie's perfume. And you have a sense of a blue-faced man with eating my chickens, but that's fine. Are we going to eat anything, Podman? I have some nuts here for trail mix. Oh, yes, you are nuts, Podman. Okay, another venture well had. Thank you, Zero. Thank you, Gregor. Thank you, Dog. And thank you, Sir Pounce. Close it out. Thank you for joining us on the road to self-discovery. I come back next week for more chilling adventures with Tom and Sir Pounce on K-Pounce Radio. Okay, Podman, did you figure out what apotheosis is? That's for next week. Okay, so I'll see you later then. Bye-bye. Okay, what do you mean? So I'll see you later, Tom, and bye-bye. Okay, good night. Crone, sweet, sweet crone, Miller Smith, Barky, Jester, Hound Dog God. It's me, your humble servant, praying in with servitude, gods, and just checking in. Yeah, I don't know what you're thinking of our adventure so far, but I mean, if it's anything to you, I say we just get straight to it so it doesn't get confusing. So when we last left off, gods... I, Martha Plimpton, and you, the rest of the gods of the Goondocks, as we'll say. We had to cross over that river thing, and we crossed over a point of no return, another point of no return, just like last week, gods. Yet another point of no return. Well, you know, where immediately I, as Martha Plimpton, as soon as my foot steps down, my mind fills with... Oh boy, you know, even the echoes of the Fratelli's voices and the voices inside my head say, oh no, that's when the doubt seizes me.
Say, there's no turning back now. Well, that definitely means we're doomed for sure then. But then I look up above me and I see the innocent eyes of Mikey, the eyes of, you know, curious, look at the world with curious innocence and openness. I see the bravery of Brad, you know, the older brother, Brad, whatever, Josh Brolin. I see the youthful wonder of Andy. And guys, you could just feel, you know, just whichever character you're feeling, just assume that I mean that you're that character. Though Miller, if you're Andy, let me know. I guess Jester might. Well, who cares? You know, guys, you do it. Do it as you do it. You know, I'm Martha Plimpton. The analytical curiosity of Data, the willingness to experiment and try. Oh, mouth, what do they call that? Brash and brave. Living by your budding libido, la vote loca. I guess you are the jester, mouse. Is that his name, mouse? I forget. Corey will call you. And then who's up? Oh, Chunk, who I just rescued, who also, you know, lives inside me someplace I know. I guess maybe we fused on that log, Chunk and Martha Plimpton. No, the gods, that's too weird to fuse. Okay, we're just all together. And we got to keep going because they're still in pursuit. The need for certainty, it's footsteps echo behind us, gods, pursuing me, making me look back and say, well, geez, I could be... as a matter of fact, I'm not afraid of certainty, so it must be the opera singer. It's just going to stop, you know. He seems pretty nice compared to the other two. But yes, we go on, gods, and we say, what is this room we've entered? It's a puzzle. In the movie, it's an organ-based puzzle, gods, but I guess this one is an organ-based puzzle. The organs within me, the bile, whatever the other stuff. Mostly, you know, I think I'm like 80% bile, gods, and some, whatever. What organ provides bitterness? Like, is there a organ that's like a vinegar and citrus based organ? Oh, you don't know. You're that's right. You're gods. Yeah, maybe we should externalize it, right? It's just too, so we have a puzzle to solve, to move on to the next stage. And it's going to take risk, and it's going to take inventiveness, and it's going to push us all past the brink, gods, because one of you now has to act as Martha Plimpton. Formerly Mikey was in charge, now I'm in charge. Middle child. Or Child of the Fratellis, depending on which fan fiction you're reading. Yeah, we have to work together to solve this puzzle, guys. It's kind of on this map. Oh, it's on the map. It's music. We have to play notes to get through, to open the next door. But we can hear the Fratellis coming. They're close. And then, you know, the first note Andy tries after all her piano lessons, Crone. And it works, and then we're one step closer to the rich stuff. And then we hear the Fratellis again, and then Andy makes a misstep, and the earth falls away. And that's how I feel when I wake up most of the time, like that Andy, that button that gets pushed, and a piece of the floor drops away. And they say, whoa, and then Data uses those teeth with the slinky attached to save me. But I guess, guys, I live in the tension in between the notes that Andy plays. If I had a Goonies shirt, that's what I would say, and it wouldn't make any sense. I live in the tension within, I guess, yeah, I'd say, maybe I should proofread it, run it by a copywriter. You're right, guys. No wonder people pray to you. I live within the tension between the notes that Andy plays, gods. I do. For as I wait for her next finger to drop, as she, I tune out from her and her arguing and people saying do it and her worrying about making the right choice, my ego expands, guys, and says, we're doomed. It doesn't matter. We're doomed. And I say, and I guess this is when I have to look at the rest of the Goonies guys and say, oh, I'm not alone. I've got Andy. She's trying her best to say, oh, well, another piece of floor dropped away. Oh, boy. And Mikey's got his inhaler. Oh, look at Mikey's face. You know, one day he'll be Samwise, but for today he's just a boy looking for the rich stuff, one-eyed Willie, you know, leading us, and, you know, he thinks he is. And Bran, you know, not the provider, you know, not a man yet, but so close. He's on the cusp of manhood. And Data, you know, Jesus, it can't be easy for Data, you know. This is still the 80s, guys. You know how, you know, you think it was bad now. So poor Data. And not only that, you know, he's got that curious mind. Maybe now he runs, you know, owns a few companies. Oh, he's fictional, God. So it's just, but not right now. Okay, Data's not. And Chunk, we love Chunk. And you know, I know how he, I know about acting out, God. So that was my middle name. And Mouth acts out in his own way. And I look at all of you and I say, well, geez, can I feel anything besides the tent? Oh, nope, a piece of floor just dropped away, guys. But then we feel it coming together. Our belief in Andy unites us. And it's a belief born out of desperation, guys, because you're right, we can't go back. We must go forward. Even though, you know, the floor is literally going away, it feels like it is, but beneath our feet. We have one another. We have a willingness to try. And don't get this one wrong. You're right, Mal. Tell her. Don't get it wrong, though, Andy. She has to guess. Is it a chord? If she would have paid more attention. But we're together in our desperation, all of us here, within this cave, our need to get on to the next stage, to escape that which constantly pursues us, the relentless Fratellis. Coming from our past, at every turn or whatever, you know, we all might say, yeah, we're together. You're right, guys. What? Oh, Hound Dog God is singing. Maybe which guy? Who? Hound Dog? Oh, I guess, are you Brent? Brent? I don't know. But you're right, guys. It's so good to be together. It's so good to be reminded that I'm not alone. As much as I think I am, you know, I'm not, and you know, I feel like the outsider in this group. And in some senses, some sense I once was, but now no longer. I, Martha Plimpton, I am, you know, I'm the straw that stirs this group. Let's just be honest. I took over for Mikey. I took over his role in the fam. But you're right, guys, we're all one. We're all Goonies down here. Well, now we're not down there. We're somewhere else. But over here, guys, it's our time. You know, you're right. I got to remember that and not forget it. It is our time, guys. And I should, you know, I got to get on the ball. I got to stick with the program. And you just keep moving one foot in front of another. Oh, the doors. Great job, Andy. You saved us. As we scramble through on the next stage of our adventure, though the unknown is ahead of us, the unknown within we are unknown within this moment. Not even sure we're really searching for anything, you know. We just want to go home at this point. We just want to escape us through these doors. But through these doors is a passage to another world, a passage to a world of water slides. Water slides that go, you know, that just say, we were free, the water rushing. We're rushing ahead to the next stage of our adventure, away from the Fratellis at a high speed, we think. We're plunging, guys. We're plunging into a whole new world, a whole unknown world. And this is our time. I can't forget that I am with you, gods. I always forget that. I think it's all on me. I gotta fix myself. I gotta control things. I gotta figure it all out. I gotta say, well, if that wasn't something, you're right, gods. You know, I'm perfect as I am, as Martha Plimpton, rewritten so I'd have a more prominent role. You're right. I just got to do the best I can. I can't do everything. Sometimes I got to trust Andy. Sometimes I got to trust Data. I don't know if I'll ever trust Mouth. Mikey, Brent, her brand. Chunk. Data and Data. I am learning to trust, guys. As we plunge, I've taken the plunge, I guess. There's no place to jump. But you got to jump anyway or something like that. And maybe I adventure in the tension between the notes instead of whatever existing, just tolerating existence. You're right, guys. You teach me so much. Oh, Crone, sweet, sweet Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky, Jester, Hound Dog, God, holy moly. Every time I think we're lost on a dull metaphorical journey, you surprise the heck out of me. And you say, Scooter, there's a reason you've watched Goonies 80 to 90 to 100 times in fifth or sixth grade, and then, you know, all the other times after that. There's a reason you say, well, my life will never be as good as Mikey's and Brant's, you know. There's a reason you searched everywhere for maps and doubloons, Fratellis, and even tried to create my own, with the baby kids, all the people whose cars I hit with snowballs so they would come after me. All the other, I said, well, I was looking for my Fratellis, and I guess, unfortunately, the master just said, well, I got about 40 Fratellis within me trying to. But you're right, guys, I'm not alone. Don't you know you're there not to let me forget it. You say to me, Crone, sweet, sweet Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky, Jester, Hound Dog, God. Hound Dog, God, I apologize. You say to me, you're not alone. It only feels like you're alone. You know, it only feels like you're doing all the work alone. But we're here right along here with you, Scoots. Six fiction. How many are there? Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky, Jester, Hound Dog, God. Six fictional gods, some more fictional than others, and five, and then Barky, who's everywhere. Hey, Barky, it's hard to talk to you when it's fiction. I miss you the most, Barky. No offense to the other gods. Barky, what'd you think of that water slide? Was that the first time in the history of the world a tree's been on a water slide? A tree per, you know, what do you call yourself? Humanoid tree? Treemanoid? I'd say treemanoid. I bet you Groot, maybe you get Guardians of the Galaxy on the horn. We can have Groot go down a water slide. What do you think about that, Barky? Oh, with the raccoon guy in his lap, that's a great idea. That's a really good idea, Barks. Anyway, guys, thanks for steering me straight here, and then a twisty water slide and being there for me. All right. Good night.
All right, everybody. This is Scooter. This is Weeks in Review. And this is where I run through my Weeks in Review stuff. What was on Sleep With Me Plus in the past month? And what you can expect to see on in the public feed too. Now I have if you sign up for Sleep With Me Plus or you're already signed up for Sleep With Me Plus, I highly recommend using a podcast app that allows search within the feeds, but using just one podcast app for Sleep With Me Plus content only, and then keeping your other podcasts, your daytime podcasts, in whatever app you use now. And I would just check out a couple podcast apps you could choose from on Apple are Overcast, iCatcher, Pocket Casts. And on Android, you could try out Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict. For this example, I have the only thing I have in my app is I think this is the I think this is the Boar Friends level. I have four podcasts, the ad-free full episodes, the story-only episodes. Nothing in Sleeping Beauty Plus has ads except for the really old episodes in the archives. We got the story-only versions of the show, the all-intro, all-night versions of the show, and then the bonus episodes. So let's start with the bonus episodes, actually. So Saturday, a new Posty episode came out. It was one that Russell loved, and that came out. And that's in the bonus feed. You know, some people like listening to the Posty Super Deluxe episodes during the day. Some people sleep to them. And, yeah, so that one is in the bonus feed. And then looks like we got a bonus coming out for Boar Besties and Boar Friends on Thursday of this week, which is April 15th when I'm recording this. And then we have another Posty Super Deluxe came out a couple weeks ago. That was a picnic lunch with Scooter. And that's in the bonus feed. And that makes just so much easier for those of you that don't like automate your playlist or anything, just to kind of build and choose how you want to listen. Let's pop into all intro, all night episodes. I know an all-intro episode is coming out this Thursday. Last Thursday was Make Great Pets Season 1 Part 2, almost 6 hours. It's about the max length we can get and have a good file size. So that was like 7 episodes of Make Great Pets. April 3rd, all-intro episode came out. And then we had... March is at bonus episodes. There was another all intro episode. So that's in the all intro all night feed. And again, like so much easier, like these all intros. Is that what everything that's in there? 277 episodes split between all. So if you love all intros, I bet 200 of those are all intros, maybe even more. And then in the store, both in the story only episode feed and then in the all ad free feed. Let's run through the new episodes. Bring It On Week started last week. So we had 12:54 was our first watch along where I watched half of the movie Bring It On. Wednesday was 12:53, Ben Broughton, the Crayon Rambler. That was one of those episodes that had an intro that I said I should make an episode based on this intro. Went to make an episode based on the intro, and it went in an even another direction of what if there was an RPG game based on the movie Bring It On, which led me to figure out I never watched Bring It On. Let me learn more. Then I ended up watching Bring It On. Then April 7th was Alba Sabelix, like we're getting ready, big announcement if I haven't made it anywhere. We're going to do 3 seasons of a crossover with Alba Salix. So that's cool. So that's something we're looking forward to doing. And that was episode 1 of that. Or that was the one we did originally. Then 12:52 was the finale of The Great British Bake Off. And episode 10... Then Multiplex 5, Tiki Transistor Hut, that was a good one. 12:50, one of my favorite episodes, probably in the past few years, a Willy Wonka tour that came out of like some news articles about experience. And I said, this has got to be an episode. And that will be a series, I mean, like a recurring thing. Then Great British Bake Off, episode 9, Patissier. And Multiplex episode 4, and then we're back to our last audio news. So it's everything. And again, if you ever need support at supercast.com is there to help you. Though if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you're not like you don't need support. But if you do, and the other thing is like, yeah, these this is my main way to communicate. I learned this on Patreon. Most people just don't read their emails from Supercast or from me, and most people aren't on our Discord or follow our social media. And so these messages are how the majority of supporters get their information. I do it in a sleepy voice because there's like, I put it at the end of the free show too. But yeah, like this is a kind of key way, but these episodes are easy to skip, especially if you're just using one podcast app, right? And building your playlists from that podcast app. So yeah, thanks everybody for supporting the show. Reach out if you have any feedback at sleepwithmepodcast.com. If you need support at supercast.com. And good night.